You are listening to Radio Albion.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another edition of the Orthodox Nationalist. This is Matthew Raphael Johnson, and it's July 29th, 2020. As always, I want to thank my donors, especially in this day and age, as everyone is struggling, and continue to ask for support. And, you know, I say the same things every time, and it irritates me, but as we all know, this, especially today, this is not a part-time job. Part-timers and people who are smart enough to know the verbiage of these kind of issues and yet not smart enough to know anything in depth are dangerous, and they do a lot of damage, and they're everywhere. People like me, people like Paul Craig Roberts and Michael Hoffman and Michael Jones, these kind of guys, we have one purpose ultimately, and that is to delegitimize the regime at every turn, to mock their intellectual pretensions, but also very seriously to undermine the ridiculous claims that they make. Now this, again, we're going to talk about China, a very important country in the fight against liberalism. Remember, you know, you still have kind of conservative types who think in 1970s terms, who actually believed the Cold War was real and, you know, couldn't tell the difference between socialism, communism, Marxism, Maoism if there was a pistol to their head. And again, this is a dangerous phenomenon. There's a lot of beginners out there. There's a lot of people who only now are realizing the prison in which they live, the lies, have no idea what to do about it, have no idea where it comes from. And the last group of people you want them subject to are these patriots who send stupid things in the mail with everything in capital letters. Talking about central banks with absolutely no concept of economics. It can be dangerous. And they mean well, some of them, but they lead people astray. And I've been dealing with these people now 30 years, and it's just, it's tiresome. And one of the things that bothers me is just the inertia. China and Russia, well, Russia is a leader of the free world. I've been saying, I'll say this every show, but China is an ally. China is an authoritarian state, as all, usually most legitimate governments are, largely because they're surrounded by enemies. The press has a strong, though not total, state component. There's plenty of private press agencies too. Probably far. I mean, you know, given our situation in America, the state press is probably more reliable. And in my experience, reading them and watching them on YouTube, they usually are. The private press agencies are owned by Westerners. Part of the purpose of a state press is to make sure the oligarchs have a balance. Even if a state, if a press agency is completely controlled and owned by the state, it doesn't delegitimize anything it does. Many of these institutions, if anyone bothered to actually read them, are far from simply worshiping the regime. If they did, no one would read them. And they're often quite critical. Russia is a particularly strong case there. So, as I've said many times before, journalists are not experts in the areas that they write about, which in and of itself shocks people. They don't even think about that. They're not trained in these areas. They don't understand these areas. They're not supposed to. As I've said before, journalists are trained to find a story. It doesn't have to be true. It doesn't have to be real. That's not the point. The point is to maintain readership and to promote the agenda. It's that simple. Now, of course, what's happening in America is probably the purest manifestation of oligarchy since Renaissance Florence. Twitter and Facebook decide what governments are allowed to say to their people. They are censoring the ads and communications of the Republican nominee for president. That is illegal. There's a million court cases in this respect. You can't do it. And as we all know, the left is planning on contesting the election and burning D.C. down if possible. I mean the Democratic Party. I mean mainstream people, if Trump is elected. Remember, 4 years ago, the regime was publishing polls that Hillary Clinton, not just is going to win, but win in a landslide. That is a significant electoral interference because they're trying to keep Republican voters home. Now, there's nothing good, generally speaking, about Republicans. They are intellectually vapid. They support endless wars abroad and believe that Mao is still alive and slaughtering people for no reason in China. Mao is a monster. But his movement, including his wife, was rounded up and arrested after his death. The new constitution of 1979 and several others afterwards changed everything. Let me explain something to you. If you have privately owned companies, if you have competition at the national or the local level, you can't be a communist or Leninist country. It's not possible. Leninism demands that there be nothing but state or party-owned institutions. And that includes finance, and that includes transportation, includes heavy, not just heavy industries, but includes everything. It includes every information technology. Everything is under control of the party, which in reality means that a handful, in the Russian case, a handful of Jews control the entire economy. That's what Leninism is. By definition, if a country is not like that, then it can't be Leninist or communist. It may be a mixed economy. It may be a third-way economy. There's a million different ways to express it. Political theory, you know, was my thing for many, many years, and in grad school, and it's centrally important because using these terms, I remember there was one, when the healthcare debates in the 90s with Bill Clinton, there was one liberal guy with a sign, the only time ever liberal made me laugh, and it was in D.C., and the sign said, "Wanting healthcare for everybody is not Stalinism." And you know, I've heard idiots on the Republican Party saying that. The argument was because Leninism was a fully state-controlled economy and it failed. Therefore, any state control over healthcare will fail for the same reason. This is the level of understanding. Now, Americans, even if they have any grasp of political theory, don't understand it when it's outside of America. Terms don't mean the same thing. The Communist Party of the Russian Federation is one of the most conservative institutions in the world. I mean, they're demanding an orthodox country. They're attacking the Federal Reserve and usury and oligarchy. They're promoting Eurasianism and nationalism all over the place. They're talking about ethnic identity. They do it all the time. They talk about the Jews all the time. All the time. The fact that they do it under the hammer and sickle might be a little weird. I'm the only one who's saying this. Because I actually read it and am still shocked at this. I'm still thinking in 1980s terms. Nothing is that way anymore. It's idiotic to have the hammer and sickle and to write like us. It doesn't make any sense, but that's how things developed. I developed a concept called Johnson's Law. Many of you know what I'm talking about. Johnson's Law it's actually serious. I mean, I make light of it, but it is a serious concept. And when I was studying and writing on the Burmese military government, which is actually very important for the drug issue and Soros and all this, and the Chinese involvement, it was actually a very serious matter that, you know, no one in America knows anything about. But it's centrally important to the Asian economy. I began to realize I'm reading New York Times, Washington Post, and they're just making things up. We know this for a fact. I mean, it was just, you know, they were using, you know, like say in the Burmese case and the Rohingya violence against the so-called, you know, Muslims in southern Burma. They claim the Rohingya is a race or an ethnic group. They're not. It's actually an insult. But they don't know that. The state-owned Burmese press makes fun of it, saying, you know, the Rohingya, it's not an ethnic group, never has been. No one's ever heard of this group. It's a creation of the Western press. Well, why not? Who's going to tell them otherwise? Johnson's Law simply states this. The more obscure the country or the area, the more the media can simply lie about it, because there's so few people that are going to be able to refute them. The other concept is that the more obscure the area, the less incentive that any journalist has to check his facts, because no one's going to say anything. And there, they could simply invent. Now, more recently, one of the things that the press did that was, again, typically irresponsible, idiotic, was the so-called Taliban being paid by Russia, in quotes, to kill Americans. And I read this when I first came across it on RT. I read it like 7 times. I didn't believe it existed. There must be some mistake. And I went to the Washington Post and I read it. Not only is this ridiculous concept, I mean, even conceptually doesn't make any sense, but that when Donald Trump heard it, he kind of nodded his head and moved on. Like, this is perfectly acceptable. The layers of stupidity that go into this. Donald Trump has been extremely harder, far, far harder than Obama on Russia. This doesn't seem to bother anybody. Because they know, no one really knows, so they could say whatever they want. He was impeached on grounds that contradict the whole Russiagate idea. Because this was withholding military aid from Ukraine, which he has every right to do, on the grounds of a matter of justice. Now, they wanted to make believe that it, because it benefited him personally, therefore it was illegal, has no foundation in law whatsoever. They simply invented it. It is an obscure area, both in terms of it being Ukraine, an obscure area of law, so they can say whatever they want. And this was the basis of impeachment. Not realizing that the fact that the Trump administration is giving military aid to an enemy of Russia means that the whole Russiagate theory has been refuted. No one mentioned that. Military aid to Ukraine, that was the whole concept of behind the impeachment. Therefore, Russia can't be true. I mean, it's not true on many other grounds. It was invented. The concept that Russia, again in quotes, paid the Taliban, you know, I guess any Mujahideen in Afghanistan is a Taliban to these people, to kill Americans, was invented. Someone said that, I guess it was, I don't know if it was Roberts or who said, it was gained by torture of someone in Cuba, in Guantanamo. But I have no evidence for that. It doesn't matter. That wouldn't help or hinder it. It was concocted. It's been dropped, of course. But the concept here, the vague terminology, the logical lapses, the factual lapses, the notion that the Taliban requires Russian money to kill Americans at a time where the U.S. has surrendered in Afghanistan and is withdrawing their troops. This was the exact same case in Syria. I was the first one to mention and write on the ridiculous gas attack nonsense. People were hesitant on that. And I said, the Syrian state is defeating and in the process of destroying the rebellion. Assad is extremely popular, especially when the rebellion began, funded by, you know, foreigners and using Mujahideen from all over the world, and American troops, of course. Why would he send a crude, not even a professional military grade gas attack, which ultimately was allegedly one bomb, in Damascus, in his own city? The layers of ignorance, you know, makes me wish that I went to my father's funeral business. At least then, you know, you're dealing with dead people, you know. When they talk, you know, at least it's interesting. You know, it's not the left, it's not the violence, it's the ignorance, including from some of our own people. I've been saying this for a long time. It's very easy to appear knowledgeable. And for the most part, you can get away with it. But God forbid you come across someone who knows or someone who asks in-depth follow-up questions and the entire movement or idea is discredited. It's not merely that the press doesn't know anything. There's no foreign correspondence anymore. It's not just that at least in military zones, the U.S. military edits everything that comes out of so-called embedded journalism. It's not just that they distort things, but they invent things entirely. When you had pretty much everyone involved in the world denying that stupid Taliban story, it didn't bother anyone. It doesn't make any difference. That's not the point. As of now, as we all know, the press has one goal, and that is to support the destruction of American cities, which, you know, normally be a good thing, except that there's a lot of innocent people there. Create as much chaos as possible and make sure that Donald Trump is destroyed one way or another. So, that being said, I do want to say a few things. And we've covered some of this in the past, but not in any depth. It was just a few weeks ago that the Secretary General of NATO, Stoltenberg, talked about the economic threat of China. It made me laugh when maybe a month ago. He gets on behind a podium and he states to the NATO brass, the world is facing a shift in the global balance of power. Like this is a revelation that he just discovered that China is the most powerful economy in the world. I mean, the U.S. is a hollowed out, you know, most of the GDP is, you know, financial services and restaurants. I mean, you know, it's China is far more stable and, you know, the Greek economic means to build. If you're not building anything, it's not economic. But the head of NATO getting on a podium and saying, oh my God, China's rising, what are we going to do? You know, on BBC Radio, this is just about a month ago, he gets on, he says, like, you know, like he just discovered this, that Beijing was creeping closer to the West in many ways. What are we going to do? Look, this is 1960. Now, of course, this has to do with the 5G networks and everything else. And, of course, Chinese firms were involved in building the 5G network in Great Britain. Now, I'm no expert on the 5G thing. I've been speaking to a few people about it. I'm not competent in the area. It's banned in Russia. I was shocked to find out that it was not banned in Iran. But to these comments, the Chinese foreign ministry said, China doesn't pose a threat to anyone who doesn't want to invade us, and that maybe NATO needs to be more rational. This is a quote, by the way, in its approach to China. And then Stoltenberg says that, and he said, like, breathlessly, China is investing heavily in modern military capabilities, and 80 ships were added to its navy in the past 5 years. which, by the way, is the exact number of ships that the UK has in its entire navy. He says, and I quote, China is becoming a more and more important military power, and we have to address it. And this is why NATO needs to exist. It's now, according to the Secretary General, to fight the shift in the global balance of power. And he's referring to economics. This is one of these things, it's like the Taliban thing. I had to read it three times. I had to check the date. You know, is this 1985? What were these guys thinking listening to him? Did he just really discover that China is investing in a modern military? As the U.S., you know, ships are sinking and planes are crashing. Just go to my Patreon site. I have paper after paper detailing why the U.S. military is physically falling apart. I've interviewed officers. Several who I know personally say I'm understating the problem. I'm understating the suicide problem. I'm understating the desertion problem. And I'm understating the morale problem. I've said from the beginning that using China is going to be a way to distract from the massive robbery from the banks, the bailout, which I think is now over $10 trillion, especially once the invented racial issue, which has no basis in reality at any level, wears out. I don't know if anyone has mentioned what the gangs in America are doing in response to all this. There are several sources, about 200,000 armed gang members exist, entirely non-white, mostly in the big cities, of course, but mostly in the Southwest, meaning it's entirely Hispanic. This is a reserve army that the elite know very much about. That's one thing they do know about. No one is talking about what their response is to this. On the best of times, they could outgun local police departments. That's why they're militarized. They're militarized because they don't want to get murdered. That's just an aside, but this is, and of course, this connection to the drug trade. These are the things that no one talks about it because either they don't know or they don't want to know. But the thing that Stoltenberg was saying is often, I see this with, you know, right-wingers all the time. I've heard usually older guys pound the desk and say, oh my God, the Chinese, the communists. And, you know, like they discovered this yesterday. Well, given the fact that the Chinese economy grew from a fourth world backwater to a first world powerhouse in, what, 25 years, maybe less than that, generally suggests that whatever economic system it has works. The massive explosion in wages and production and technology, which of course includes, you know, finance and military and everything else. Generally speaking, it seems that the party, the Communist Party, you know, it's a misnomer at this point, must be pretty popular. And the CIA was fomenting violence in the western part of the country, these separatist groups that were completely created by the West. I am the only one who asked the question, why would they want to separate from China? They really still are a backwater in the western part of the country. Wouldn't they want the same treatment that they got elsewhere? The other phenomenon, and this is in the elite financial press, and I follow this, actually I'm keeping track, roughly between every 12 and 13 days, it depends on the year, somebody claims that either the Russian or the Chinese economy is going to collapse. Now, they know this isn't true. If any economy is going to collapse, it's the U.S., the Belgian, the British. There's no question. They're, you know, in the process of collapsing as it is. The concept is to chase away any kind of investment and to have people dismiss what's happened in those two countries over the last 20 years. That's what the financial press does. They're well aware that this simply isn't true, but it's the phenomenon. As the American economy is collapsing, they then write stories by the bucket load that their enemies' economies are collapsing. As the political class in the West has almost zero legitimacy or public support they then project that the economies, the political class of their enemies has no public support, and they're in all kinds of trouble. And very recently, as the threat of inflation, and no one's talking about that as far as I know, except for Paul Craig Roberts, is very real in the near future. I think a few other people have mentioned it now, but it's not a mainstream issue because the press hasn't permitted it. But inflation will destroy what anything else hasn't destroyed. They're now projecting that the Chinese are now facing massive inflation. But what's the truth of the matter? I've said a million times over that China is a national socialist economy in every sense. National socialism doesn't necessarily mean Hitlerism, although obviously they have a lot in common. It's really the ideology of the third world coming out of colonialism. In one form or another, but sometimes, the nature of these artificial countries, especially in Africa, is, they've gone nowhere. Nigeria is drowning in oil. There are precious metals and diamonds. It's like it's growing out of the ground, and yet they remain third world. Anyway, it seems that, Japan, which is essentially a few rocks sticking out of the water, is and has been a first world country for a century and a half at least. But China, I would go back to the 1970s, rejected Maoism vehemently. As I said, the Gang of Four was arrested and the party purged. Those guys were either arrested or simply removed from power. In the 1990s, hundreds of millions of people were pulled out of poverty. You have, for better or for worse, middle-class lifestyles for millions. They have a domestic demand. They don't really need foreign markets anymore. They've been preparing for the collapse of the American economy for a very long time. No one takes the Western economy seriously, and the proof of that is that the price of gold, has already been 2,000. I don't know if it's there yet or not, which is inconceivable. It was inconceivable a year ago. One of the more interesting phenomena I've written on this substantially is, of course, the Belt and Road Initiative. This is the creation of a counter-liberal, anti-liberal economic structure, roughly corresponding to the old Silk Road of the Middle Ages. It's already becoming a success, and again, bringing millions of people out of poverty. That's a simple fact. The West is threatening every Western country that's going to invest in it, threatening them with anything it can, and yet it doesn't work. Germany's invested in it. You have investments everywhere. Italy, who's going to be leaving the EU soon, it's a separate issue, is investing in it. I've explained at length what sanctions are. They really don't exist. Sanctions, I know I've said this before, but threatening sanctions, which the U.S. government does every 10 minutes or so. Why hasn't a single American corporation, there's a lot of investment in these places, ever been hauled into court for violating sanctions? In fact, how many cases exist at all of anyone violating sanctions that the U.S. has prosecuted successfully? Every once in a while, you come across somebody, it's usually a foreigner, usually connected with an enemy state. So when Turkey was kind of flirting with China, a few Turkish bankers in Philadelphia were arrested. No one had. Now, I'm not going to go so far as to say sanctions don't exist, but given the nature of the law and given how easy it is to evade it, there is no such thing as open-ended laws. You can't say you cannot trade with a country. You imagine capitalist conglomerates tolerating that. No. Sanctions law has to have a very specific reason, a very specific target. It has to explain in depth which aspects of the economy are affected and why. And if you actually read some of the, not the laws themselves, but the executive branch protocols, they have to explain every single item that's under sanctions in detail and why it should be included there. If people are sanctioned, they have to be mentioned as individuals, their addresses, everything, and explanations, and how they can get out of it. Not to mention the fact that the president at any moment, all sanctions laws have this, can waive a sanction order for a specific person or country or trading. And of course, sanctions don't involve anything that's considered, quote, strategic to American interests, whatever that means. So the laws are nonsense. As I mentioned before, there's about 200 American firms invested in Iran. Nothing ever happens to them. It's when a powerless, collapsing country wants to act like it's doing something, it yells something about sanctions. And even educated people believe that it means that you're not allowed to trade there, or else you're in trouble. In the Chinese case, the Belt Road Initiative is something where national entities are encouraged to be national entities. For the U.S. and certainly American corporations, of course, more power, that is the U.S. and politically speaking, the U.S. government is largely privatized, and so corporate America is America in terms of foreign policy, demand political changes, economic changes, most of which are failures, in exchange for any kind of investment or money whatsoever. I was talking about, I don't care about professional sports, but the Washington Redskins thing. You know, I'm happy that they called it the football team. Idiotic nonsense. But even in the mainstream press, some of you who follow that issue, and this is very important to understand, the American Indians for years have said that there's no problem, absolutely no problem, with the Redskins thing. If it was some drunk Indian, that would be one thing, but, you know, it's respectful, strong, that's the whole point of it. That's why it's a part of a football team, or the Chiefs. It's meant to be complimentary. It's meant to be strength and bravery and all that. So why did Washington do what they did? It was Federal Express, Coca-Cola, and a handful of other firms that demanded it be done. Not a single Indian said a word. There's one of these national Native American things that are entirely white. I saw a demonstration of people dressed up as Indians. They were entirely white. No, actual tribes, though, have for years, the Seminoles in Florida, for example, said with the Florida team, have said that they have no problem with this. But that's not the issue. It was corporate America that said, we will pull all of our funding and all of our advertisements and all of our sponsorships unless, and tell everyone else to do it unless you change. And these are the people who said it. It's capitalism. I'll tell this to you one more time. The reason I mention this, of course, is that these are the companies who then go and invest elsewhere in the world and demand these same kind of things. It's naive to believe that Federal Express doesn't operate in countries and demands liberal, whether it be gay rights or abortion, as a part of its operating procedure. This is an aspect of corporate America. Why? Why is no one talking about it? Because, well, among many other things, capitalism is a revolutionary force. Karl Marx, I mentioned this before, but people don't seem to get it. Karl Marx talks about capitalism a lot as a predecessor for social. We know all this. But why? It's not just a matter of collecting or accumulating the resources and building the conglomerates. It's in destroying the traditional relationships in society. It is about, and he says this very explicitly, about destroying national borders. He says so. The reason why Marxism is international is because of capitalism. It would never work unless capitalism destroys all these traditional modes of production and all these modes of communication. Only then can Marxism do it. So Marx is very clear. Capitalism is a revolutionary force. Now, theoretically, he has a different explanation, but the real truth is it's not oligarchic enough. The true Stalinist, as Stalin himself said many times, world order is where a handful of oligarchs control every single economic decision. Now, I mentioned Stalin because I've criticized people who think he's a nationalist. And I have many of his quotes, many of his writings that all exist in English. They're not secret. Talking about an international language and the fact that ultimately the goal is a single world factory owned by the party, meaning him and his friends. clearly, as you see, this is all connected. To think that, you know, and people, again, the ignorance is such that you mention China and you automatically think Mao. Like, this is 1965. China is as a society, is far more traditional and conservative in the broad sense than anything in the U.S. Can you imagine what's happening in the U.S. today happening there? Now, it's true, Tiananmen Square never happened. Even NBC admitted that. The BBC also admitted that. I have a paper on that subject. You know what would happen. And any legitimate government would do that. China is not only going to collapse, but it will preside over the American collapse. There's a lot of patriots out there who honestly believe that the Chinese at one point decided they're going to march over to America, uproot American capitalist firms, and then plant them into China. They really believe this. Chinese stole these companies. They just marched off with them. And, you know, again, I know these people, they're decent people. They're idiots, but they're decent people. The truth is, though, of course, the American government subsidized American firms. And subsidy, I mean subsidized insurance for them to the U.S. Import-Export Bank does this to subsidize their – if anything goes wrong, they get paid. So their transfer abroad is more or less risk-free at a price. China simply benefited from it. Imports from China are American companies using Chinese labor and then jacking up the price because they've saved a lot of money and sending it into the U.S. So the concept of China is itself a vague, almost a nonsensical concept. It's American corporate capital. Now, some of you know the Chinese laws are very strict on what investment means. There has to be a tremendous benefit for the Chinese people. There has to be a connection with Chinese labor and capital. There has to be educational things done. They can't be involved in subversion. You know, they can't do what liberal people do. And they've accepted this because no one's going to mess with a national state, which is what China is. And it's essential to know this. The average well-educated American has no idea how the Chinese government operates, that there are, I think now, 7 political parties, although political parties don't mean the same there as here. They're mostly advisory bodies, powerful advisory bodies, but advisory bodies, and they function as autonomous corporations. The concept of political parties, as you know, the Federalists who wrote the Constitution condemned vehemently. And we know this because what they meant was political parties were always an oligarchic interest that used the political system to further its own ends. That's how the, you know, people like James Madison saw political parties. It was an insult. A party was simply a faction of rich guys that manipulated the political process. They're not good things, and they never were. A political party is a sign of decay, and always it is an oligarchic faction. And even if they don't start off that way, they end up that way. Now, back to NATO and China. There was a time when NATO may have had a vague purpose. Now remember, as I've proven 1,000 times over, NATO countries were financing the Soviet Union, even in military equipment. Anthony Sutton has proven that with internal documents. He has the receipts from these transactions. Western companies made billions financing the Soviet military. So a lot of it is just window dressing. But it was a real alliance. It did function militarily and did have a purpose. But that changed. I said in 1990s that the attack on Serbia was a test case. What is the post-so-called Cold War world going to look like? And Serbia was one of the probably the first test case, as well as Iraq. Then, of course, after that, the so-called liberal nation-building operations in Afghanistan and the Libyan disaster, this is what NATO is. So it is a militarized part of the global, what they call the global homo regime, meaning the far-left oligarchs, because all of these movements are financed by them. Stoltenberg says, this is not about a global presence, but a global approach. I don't know what the difference between those two things is. This guy just discovered that China is growing in power, so I don't know what he means. And as it turns out, this is what's calling the crisis, is that the U.S. wants NATO to serve under it. But it's not going to happen. Germany has already told the U.S. it will not follow her dictates and it will not follow any sanctions against Russia. We talked at some length. Sven and I talked about Italy in a huge move to leave the EU, which, and France is, as always, never liked it in the first place. But the U.S. military can't defeat the Mujahideen in Afghanistan. Can you imagine it going up against the Chinese? And as far as Germany, and I mentioned Germany, this has come up many times, the Germans, in rejecting the American approach to things, said, Heiko Maas told the newspaper Bild just a few weeks ago, stated the obvious, that China is Germany's largest trading partner, an emerging superpower, actually is a superpower, and therefore a rational allied strategy with China should be approached. Now, as the U.S., whether it be Obama or Trump, it doesn't matter, seeks to provoke China into war, the Germans are doing the exact opposite. They realize that no one has any confidence in the Western economy, no one has any confidence in the Western military, God knows. There's no choice but to realize that the Chinese system is extremely successful. The foreign minister in Germany said that the dialogue with China should be far more than, it shouldn't be just economic. That she is a decisive power in world trade and not simply a problem. And you have people in policy-making positions, whether it be in NATO, in the State Department, who really think China is like the 1950s, fourth world backwater. They really believe this. But at the same time, you have the Germans completely rejecting American foreign policy, saying that the U.S. is a partner of Germany, but a complicated one. In other words, he was far more interested in pursuing alliance with China than the U.S. And there's very good economic reasons for that. The EU and China are going to have a high-level summit. It initially was September, but it's going to be moved back. China is having no difficulties with this. And I came across something, and I mentioned it elsewhere, July 16th, Russia Today and a few other places. Russia Today has no problem with this, but other places were forced to admit that the Chinese economy is growing and is not in a recession. The so-called pandemic dissipated fairly quickly. Travel restrictions have been lifted, and the economy is growing. At this point, second quarter, 3.2% growth, as the American financial press says that they're collapsing. Now, of course, the first 3 months of this year was a big a contraction in the economy. You had a shrinkage of roughly 6%. But this has already been made up for. I refuse to believe that the American agencies will be honest about this. Now, the 3.2% comes from the Chinese National Bureau of Statistics. Of course, the Westerners will downplay this. they predicted, and by prediction, it was an attempt to fulfill a wish, that it was only going to be 2.5%. And of course, Bloomberg said about 2.4% in the second quarter. Understand, when these experts, who are usually hacks, ignorant men, make a so-called prediction, the point is wish fulfillment. The point is that someone reading this, and the elites do read this, they will avoid investing in a certain place, thereby bringing the prediction about. Well, they failed again. The COVID-19 scam has destroyed economies all over the world, except for China. The nonsensical, and I have to cover this too many times, I'm not going to deal with it again, but all of the neocon threats against China and the COVID numbers, as they themselves are inflating the numbers in the U.S., again, another projection. Everything that they do, they then project and impose on China or Russia. And yet, they have to deal with the fact that the only economy that is growing, at least in the American orbit, is China. The statement is, generally, this is a quote, generally speaking, the national economy overcame the adverse impact of the epidemic, notice they don't say pandemic, in the first half gradually, and demonstrated a momentum of restorative growth and gradual recovery, further manifesting its development, resilience, and vitality. And the confidence is very high there. The NBS was very clear, of course, and the Silk Road has everything to do with this. I keep saying this, and it's important to remember. I remember this as a teenager. I distinctly remember reading, and I could find this, I've reprinted it elsewhere, the CIA talking about the strength of the Soviet economy in 1990. I have several papers where I mention this, and I cite the source. What's easy to get. Now, and of course, that was immediately taken by the New York Times and everything else. They were actually printing stories about the collapse of the Soviet Union on page one. Then in the economic section, we're talking about how the economy is going to be turning around and everything else in page one of the economic section. I saw that when I was in college. The truth is now you cannot trust the statistics coming out of the American press. You can't trust the statistics coming out of the American government or the private agencies that they hire to do that. But even if they were telling the truth, the press will not. We talked about the deliberate downplaying of inflation. Paul Craig Roberts, of course, being the Assistant Secretary of the Treasury under Reagan, explained in great detail how they manipulate that number. It is far higher. I'm seeing the prices of basic goods go through the roof, and yet they're claiming minimal inflation. You know, Americans are so economically literate, including economists, that they're not seeing that the printing of this money in the trillions, mostly going to corporate America and, you know, elite groups like, you know, Amnesty International and ADL. And the ADL has received money. Without any production, or really, you know, the day-to-day increases in commerce that you need, is nothing but inflation. That's the definition of inflation. And I have not seen this. It's not a mainstream issue. I know people know this, but I'm sorry. I know that elites know this, but there is no public discussion of this. And I've had to deal with the fact that even people don't know what inflation is, or the connection between inflation and production. Now, one of the more interesting things in the press, this is back from RT in late May, the Chinese government responding to the endless projections from the American press that this virus will collapse the Chinese economy. They've been saying this again for decades, but now they have this mysterious virus to use. And the Chinese response was worthwhile. Now, the Chinese government, their financial ministry said that, of course, this couldn't be foreseen. Chinese response to it initially was better than any place in the world. They shut down everything. They were blowing up bridges. The travel ban, they had people, you know, they couldn't leave their homes, and it stopped fairly quickly. Now, the truth is, and you're only going to find this in the press abroad, that because China was in a very healthy fiscal position to begin with, it could weather a storm like this. Because the currency is under state control and production continues to grow, it's just a short-term event. And the same goes for any state with economy with a strong state sector. This really is a blip in the Chinese radar. By now, the contraction in the early part of the year has been made up for. The Chinese debt is pretty much non-existent. When I say that, I mean long-term debt, like the debt the U.S. has. Short-term debt is fairly high, but that's not uncommon. It's a modest debt to percentage of GDP level. And consumer debt is modest. No one ever talks about consumer debt. It is one of the reasons the U.S. economy can't recover. How many years have I been saying this? They're not over-leveraged like the Americans are. So a dip in the economy, which is really what, I mean, a serious one, is they could recover from it very easily. With the U.S., there is no foundation. There is no credit. There is nowhere to go. There's nowhere to spend. There's no credit to extend. And money is being printed and sent to the elites. And it's like as the ship sinks, people are ripping up all of the gold plated things and art and getting out of there. That's all this is. The Chinese, of course, are just simply in a better position. But the state did, using its own control over finance, mobilize funds, and supported businesses of all types. They didn't bail anybody out, but they made sure that this didn't affect them excessively. And it was far more effective than in the West. And same thing happened in 97, 98 with the Soros crisis, and also in 08, 09. Very few people in the West noticed this. And Russians, Sergei Lukonin, Institute for World Economy and International Relations, agrees with this analysis. Because of the stability and the regular growth of the Chinese economy, something like this can be weathered. And not only are they not contracting, they're upgrading equipment as if nothing happened. Now, early July, China is increasing its foreign exchange reserves, which, by the way, are the world's largest. And now they're at a point, but almost, I think they're almost at $4 trillion, according to the central bank. And of course, the American financial press said, well, it's only $3 trillion is what they're going to do to keep anyone from panicking. And bullion reserves stayed unchanged roughly until the end of May. And they're at about 65 million troy ounces. So they're at roughly $120 billion worth of gold. I want you to remember, gold in the American vaults is not owned by the U.S. They are owned by other countries. They're owned by oligarchs. And many times they're just pieces of paper. You can't owe the world and their own elites trillions and trillions of dollars and have gold sitting around. It doesn't make any sense. So not only does China and Russia now pretty much corner the gold market as far as they can, but now their foreign reserves are immensely high. Which means that they're even further cushioned against any problems. You have ignorant people who say dumb things like the Russian economy is dependent on oil. Roughly, I think 8 or 9% of the GDP is oil-based. Foreign earnings are another matter, but Norway is far more dependent on. I think Canada is far more dependent on oil than Russia is. I have a paper on that. But just to prove my point, on May 5th, you had American economists. An idiot named John Quelch, dean of the University of Miami Business School. Business school, this is not, they're not economists. The big difference. But he gets interviewed for some reason, and he intones that it's going to be a long time before China recovers from this. He said, and again, I don't know where statistics come from. He says, well, almost all the Chinese businesses are opened. Only 40% are operating at full capacity. Like this is like this isn't the case everywhere. What are the American numbers? And then he said an incredibly stupid statement. He said the consumers in China have been left without sufficient funds to spur the economy. And then he concluded by saying, I think the predictions about a rapid bounce back are probably a little bit overdone. John Quelch, typical American economist, professor, is a moron. He knows, well, maybe he doesn't know. I don't want to assume that he's corrupt. He may just be dumb. To be in this position at this point is to serve the regime, as I've said many times before. He's not an economist. He's in business school. And certainly he's not an economist by saying dumb things like this. He has to admit that, well, at the time, this is May 5th, 91% of the companies have reopened. But then he can't say that. So, well, only 40% roughly are operating at full capacity. Probably keeping himself from saying, oh, it's going to collapse very soon. But to say that Chinese consumers have been left without sufficient funds, as if, you know, the state's responsibility to give them these funds, it's one of the worst forms of projection, really, this broadcast has been about. I'll talk about projection quite a bit. American elites do it all the time. This is the precise problem in the U.S. Now, business guys probably know that. Using the passive voice is odd. Consumers in China have been left without sufficient funds to spur the economy. American consumer debt is about $20 trillion. What is he talking about? Chinese consumer debt is extremely low. Investor confidence is extremely high. Foreign exchange reserves are very high, meaning it doesn't really matter what happens. The markets can collapse entirely. If it's only for a short period of time, they have the means to weather it. I said from the very beginning, and unfortunately my predictions come true. No one listens to me, but the U.S. is going to use China, based on Johnson's Law, to cover over from the collapse of the economy. So far, they're unsuccessful. Part of the reason is that the U.S. military brass is aware that they're in no position to even offer token resistance to China, given the fact that they're spread out all over the world and have a zero morale and are looking at collapsing infrastructure despite a $1 trillion budget. Demanding that the U.S. remove its production from China is absurd. One of the intelligent things that Quelch said is that bringing manufacturing back to the U.S. from China is a bit of a problem. First of all, bringing them back, who's going to do the bringing? Corporate America is going to go where it wants, and the U.S. government is going to shut up. They are the U.S. government. This is a ridiculous libertarian notion that government and corporate capital are really different things. They're not. They tell the government what to do, not the other way around. And number two, even if that were possible, and it would be a wonderful thing, of course, in many ways, we don't have the trained people for this. We don't have the infrastructure. We don't have the roadways for this. We don't have the bridges for this. The U.S. hasn't been an industrialized economy in how long? Again, this is one of these patriot things. You know, they're well-intentioned, but they don't get this. We're going to bring jobs back to the U.S. from China as if, you know, the government has control over this. They're going to go over there, march back, and bring the jobs back because the Chinese marched over here and brought it over there. I mean, this is how they think. No one bothers to ask, does the U.S. have the people to staff these jobs? They don't. Does the U.S. have the educational system for an industrial economy? They don't. Is there funds to switch over? There's none. The infrastructure would collapse instantaneously, given the massive increase of freight and transportation that would put a huge stress on the bridges and roadways. Our collapsing infrastructure is based on a service economy. Literally and figuratively, an industrial economy is heavier. and is hell on infrastructure. The infrastructure couldn't handle it. So even if by some miracle there was a way to, you know, stupid phrase, bring jobs back, you know, meaning bringing capital to reinvest in America rather than, you know, going to China. This is mostly American companies going to China, paying workers less, and then selling the product at an inflated price and getting huge profits. And then the same company condemning China for their practices. That's really what that means. Even if that were possible, the people, the mentality, the education system, the finance, the infrastructure doesn't exist to support it. So it doesn't make any difference. And it's not, it couldn't happen. There's nowhere to go from here. There's no credit to be given. When you have $11 trillion, well, $15 trillion by now, going to the elites, there's no more. This is purely inflationary. So even if you could say we're bringing these, bringing the capital is going to come back to the U.S., that would be impossible. Where would they go? There's no way to function. The entire economy is has long since forgotten how to run industrially. Nothing is present. It's a huge, it would cost trillions and trillions a month to transfer the American economy back to a industrial. It would take decades. So this has been a foray into American illiteracy. Yeah. Thank you everyone for listening. I'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye.